We are in the book of Leviticus, chapter 1, 2, and 3.
The Lord summoned Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when any of you bring an offering of livestock to the Lord, you shall bring your offering from the herd or from the flock. If the offering is a burnt offering from the herd, you shall offer a male without blemish. You shall bring it to the entrance of the tent of meeting for acceptance in your behalf before the Lord. You shall lay your hand on the head of the burnt offering, and it shall be acceptable in your behalf as atonement for you. The bull shall be slaughtered before the Lord, and Aaron's sons, the priests, shall offer the blood, dashing the blood against all sides of the altar that is at the entrance of the tent of meeting. The burnt offering shall be flayed and cut up into its parts. The sons of the priest Aaron shall put fire on the altar and arrange wood on the fire. Aaron's sons, the priest, shall arrange the parts with the head and the suet on the wood that is on the fire on the altar. But its entrails and its legs shall be washed with water. Then the priest shall burn the whole into smoke on the altar as a burnt offering, an offering by fire, a pleasing odor to the Lord. If your gift for a burnt offering is from the flock, from the sheep or goats, your offering shall be a male without blemish. It shall be slaughtered on the north side of the altar before the Lord. And Aaron's sons the priest shall dash the blood against the sides of the altar. It shall be cut up into its parts, and its head and its suet, and the priest shall arrange them on the wood that is on the fire on the altar. But the entrails and the legs shall be washed with water. Then the priest shall offer the whole and burn it into smoke on the altar. It is a burnt offering, an offering by fire of pleasing odor to the Lord. If your offering to the Lord is a burnt offering of birds, you shall choose an offering from turtle doves or pigeons. The priest shall bring it to the altar and wring off its head and turn it into smoke on the altar. And its blood shall be drained out against the side of the altar. He shall remove its crop from its contents and throw it against the east side of the altar in the place for ashes. He shall tear it open by its wings without severing it. Then the priest shall turn it into smoke on the altar on the wood that is on the fire. It is a burnt offering, an offering by fire of pleasing odor to the Lord. When anyone presents a grain offering to the Lord, its offering shall be of choice flour. The worshipper shall pour oil on it and put frankincense on it and bring it to Aaron's sons, the priests. After taking from it a handful of choice flour and oil and all its frankincense, the priest shall turn this token portion into smoke on the altar, an offering by fire of pleasing odor to the Lord. And what is left of the grain offering shall be for Aaron and his sons, a most holy part of the offering by fire to the Lord. When you present a grain offering baked in the oven, it shall be of choice flour, unleavened cakes mixed with oil, or unleavened wafers spread with oil. If your offering is grain prepared on a griddle, it shall be of choice flour mixed with oil, unleavened. Break it in pieces and pour oil on it. It is a grain offering. If your offering is grain prepared in a pan, it shall be made of choice flour and oil. You shall bring to the Lord the grain offering that is prepared in any of these ways. And when it is presented to the priest, he shall take it to the altar. The priest shall remove from the grain offering its token portion and turn this into smoke on the altar, an offering by fire of pleasing odor to the Lord. And what is left of the grain offering shall be for Aaron and his sons. It is a most holy part of the offering by fire to the Lord. No grain offering that you bring to the Lord shall be made with leaven, for you must not turn any leaven or honey into smoke as an offering by fire to the Lord. You may bring them to the Lord as an offering of choice products, but they shall not be offered on the altar for a pleasing odor. You shall not omit from your grain offering the salt of the covenant with your God. With all your offerings you shall offer salt. If you bring a grain offering of first fruits to the Lord, you shall bring it. You shall bring as a grain offering as your first fruits. Coarse new grain from fresh ears, parched with fire. You shall add oil to it and lay frankincense on it. It is a grain offering, and the priest shall turn a token portion of it into smoke. Some of the coarse grain and oil, with all of the frankincense, it is an offering by fire to the Lord. If an offering is a sacrifice of well-being, if you offer an animal of the herd, whether male or female, you shall offer one without blemish before the Lord. You shall lay your hand on the head of the offering and slaughter it at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And Aaron's sons, the priests, shall dash the blood against the sides of the altar. You shall offer from the sacrifice of well-being as an offering by fire to the Lord. The fat that covers the entrails and all the fat in and around the entrails, and two kidneys with the fat that is on them at the loins and the appendage of the liver, which he shall remove with the kidneys. Then Aaron's sons shall turn these into smoke on the altar with the burnt offering that is on the wood on the fire as an offering by fire of pleasing odor to the Lord. If your offering for a sacrifice of well-being to the Lord is from the flock, male or female, you shall offer one without blemish. If you present a sheep as your offering, you shall bring it before the Lord and lay your hand on the head of the offering. It shall be slaughtered before the tent of meeting, and Aaron's sons shall dash its blood against all sides of the altar. You shall present its fat from the sacrifice of well-being as an offering by fire to the Lord. The whole broad tail, which shall be removed close to the backbone, the fat that covers the entrails, and all the fat that is around the entrails, the two kidneys with the fat that is on them in the loins, and the appendage of the liver, which you shall remove from the kidneys. Then the priest shall turn these into smoke on the altar as a food offering by fire to the Lord. If your offering is a goat, you shall bring it before the Lord and lay your hand on its head. It shall be slaughtered before the tent of meeting, and the sons of Aaron shall dash its blood against all the sides of the altar. You shall present your offering from it as an offering by fire to the Lord, the fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is around the entrails, the two kidneys with the fat that is on them, the loins, and the appendage of the liver, which you shall remove with the kidneys. Then the priest shall turn them into smoke on the altar as a food offering by fire for a pleasing odor. All fat is the Lord's. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your settlements. You must not eat any fat or any blood.
Any thoughts?
Why are certain offerings rinsed with water? Actually, certain parts of the offerings are rinsed with water, not all of them. Was it like the legs and some other things were rinsed with water, but some weren't?
Right.
Why is that?
Right. Talk about that.
And I've never heard, really, the grain offering. I mean, it's not under fellowship offering. It's not under a sin offering. It's a particular offering, the grain offering, and I never knew exactly what that one was for.
We'll talk about that. That's one of the most important offerings, by the way. One of the most important offering is the grain offering. Any comments? Any other comments? Any other questions? Any other statements? Daniel?
I thought it was comical that in Jewish tradition, when you're making challah bread, like as you've noticed, take a piece of it as you're kneading it and you throw it in the fireplace as the grain offering for the challah bread. What does challah bread have in it? Yeast and honey and various other sweeteners in it, which of course was no longer allowed. I haven't quite figured out why, where do they get that tradition from? It doesn't make any sense. It's not Torah, it's not, it just seems bizarre to me. But they call it the grain offering when they do that.
But it's a train, it's a tradition.
It's not nothing biblical about it at all.
It's basically a tradition. Pat? I mean, not Pat. You can have a question. Pure Ann.
I just find that there's so much detail in the reading that it's very specific.
What is very specific?
It's all very specific. There's
okay,
no
right. Very
lack
specific.
Of detail.
Hope we can learn something today. I'm going to use a lot of Hebrew phrases and then try to explain a little bit. The book of Leviticus is probably one of the books that's probably hardest to picture and find out exactly the purpose of what's going on. As you remember, we ended the previous book and the tabernacle was completely erected. Now, as of the first month. Now, in this Vedic thing, this Varika, by the way, is the name of the book of Leviticus in Hebrew, means, and he called. And he called Moses unto the tabernacle, and he said, now I want you to instruct these people to do something. Now, the first three we have here, chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3, is what's called, if you wish to do so. It's a willing one. Now, we have to ask ourselves a question. When is it willingly, and when is it when you just want to butter up? Okay? Now, this is not about a tradition of, quote, doing the rites in order to be religious with God. He has a point for each one of these things. As we go through the book of Leviticus, we're going to try to remember certain things of what he's doing. First thing he introduced is what? What kind of offering did he ask? But it was the first thing he introduced. The whole offering. Right? And the second one was what? It's called the peace offering. That's Hebrew. I'll use a Hebrew word on that later on. And the last one was, the Minhag offering. And the last one was the peace offering, or the one that we'll go through that word. Very important to go through that word when we get there. So we're asking ourselves, is this something that is done by tradition, or is it something that God says, when you do these things, because that's basically what it boils down to. So you as an individual, and I as an individual, there comes a point in our world, in our life, that we want to do something, quote, to give God an offering. By the way, the word, the Hebrew word for offering is karban. 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 All that means you're going to offer something. And this particular first offering is about a holah offering. And we'll talk about the holah in a minute. But get used to that word of karban. Get roll the R if you can. Carbine. It's not carbon, it's carbine. Carbon. And basically what that just means is that you are going to, it comes from a Hebrew word, when you come near unto the tabernacle, when you decide to come to the tabernacle, that's what the word offering means. When you come to the place where God is at, you are approaching Him, and what you are going to approach Him with is, first thing He mentions is the whole offering. Ola means whole or complete. Now, there's a very interesting word about this word. We understand what it can mean, but it came from a Hebrew word, and it means that which is to step, going upward. A whole lot means a step going up. You're walking and going up. It also has an opposite meaning. Spelt the same exact way, pronounced the same way, and has just the opposite meaning. It has a meaning of, believe it or not, injustice, unrighteousness, and wrong. Fascinating terminology, right? And we say, well, no, I don't want to hear that definition. I want to hear this one over here first. And I'll worry about the other one, sometime, if it shows up, we'll talk about it. Well, have to ask yourself a question.
Verse 3.
All right. There's certain things he says about this whole offering. It must be without blemish. And that Hebrew word for that word is tamim, plurality. Tamim. Now, tamim is a plural terminology, not a singular one. And so it's with several things that is presented before God. This thing must have several things that are, quote, without blemish, end quote. All right? We got that picture so far? So we're looking at this word, and we have to say, okay, and it's a free will offering. All right? Without blemish, it means, in a sense, the entire thing, and we know that, and also has another secondary meaning. Secondary meaning of this word, of tarmin, is integrity, truth. It has a complete secondary meaning that whatever you present and you come before God, your korban, you are going to present to him a completely and entirely according to truth and facts. So when you offer something to God and you come before God, you're doing your korban and you're going to go to him, he's only interested in one thing. The physical thing about the animal is one thing, yes. But truth, all right, based upon facts. We all know that the reason why we believe what we believe in is because something called truth. Your faith is based upon what is truth. And so God says, if you're going to come to me on a spiritual basis here, you're going to come to me, I want you to come, or kavain, come to me. You're approaching me now, and I want you to approach to me with truth and facts. The very fascinating thing in the fourth verse. Did you everybody notice this? This is a whole offering. And it's called an atonement one. Isn't that interesting? I thought atonement was for, you know, when the goat was killed. And the sin, the transgressing iniquity was covered up. Here this person who is coming up to the eternal creator of heaven, or in this case, the tabernacle, a representation of where the Messiah himself is. He's going there and he is going to approach God and he's going to give him something. And when he gives him something, it's going to be something that is of truth and which is a fact. And then when he lays his hands upon it, accepting it, then it turns into an atonement for him. So when you and I, when we want to get in contact with God, we want to make contact with God, we want to approach him, we have to approach him with a hola. All right? Spiritually speaking, we're going to reapproach him with a hola. A kavain hola. Must be true, must be complete, nothing left out, and must be based upon facts. Interesting thing, right? So that's a secondary meaning of when it says without blemish, without a flaw. You're saying, wow. Now in the physical world, if you actually take, in this case it's a herd, I mean, it's from the cattle, and you're taking a bull, generally of the first year, you don't pick the bull because it's perfect. There are certain bulls in the cattle industry that when they breed with another, with a cow, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger, more powerful. And you say, well, I don't want to give that one. I'll give this one over here. No, God says, I want that one. If you're going to approach me with a hola, I want it completed. I want the best. And don't bring forth to me, telling me, because I know the truth, And the fact is, that bowl is better than that one. You will not have a covering. So the person is coming before God. He's wanting God to cover him. Doesn't tell us what it is, does it? Doesn't tell us whether he is sinning, transgressing, murder, whatever it is, his thoughts are bright. Doesn't tell you anything like that. All it says, the person is voluntarily, on his own, wants to approach God. And he wants to approach God with a hola. And he wants to give him the complete thing. The truth. And sure enough, God accepts it. That's what the voluntary offering is all about. It is something that you know and God knows. And if you come to him first, the first thing you do to God, you come to him first with a hola, with an offering, with something that is different. You're approaching him and you're giving him the complete picture. You're giving him the truth. All right? That's all volunteer, isn't it? So this particular statement, now there's three different things here. You go through these things, we'll go in detail with them. What I didn't want to come talk to you about. It's very fascinating. You go into verse 4. He said, the one who is approaching, the one who's doing the karban, he's approaching. And he must lay his hands upon the head of the animal, the head of the animal. And he must then therefore do something else. What must he do? He must kill it. He must kill the animal, not the priest. So if you come before the Messiah, who is the high priest, and you bring a, quote, a hola to him, it is your function to complete the entire picture. You must do the entire job. Then he will take and burn the thing on. But you have to do certain things. You have to take the internals and wash them all off. Because God doesn't want the dung. He wants all clean, all pure, nothing in it. So he'll wash it with water. And now the priest must put things in order. What is the first thing he puts in order on the fire? The skin is taken off. The head. The head and the fat. Then comes the internals, the legs, all the pieces put together. And then the last thing puts upon this thing is the internals. Everything now turns into smoke, burns up. Why is it pleasing to God? Why is that a pleasing aroma? You say, well, it stinks like crazy. Why should it be pleasing to God? Like smoke? I'm open for ideas. Any ideas? Any thoughts? Not this one. This was the whole offering. Okay. Nothing was eaten. Well, we're not in the sin offering yet.
I think it probably smelled pretty good. I don't know. Yeah, barbecue.
Actual skin. That's what I want. Did they burn the skin? They're not specific about that. It says he's to skin it.
No, the skin is kept. But later on, it tells you what the skin is used for. We'll not worry about that right now. We're going to talk about just the whole offer. When you're approaching God, this is what you must do. Now, in your spiritual world, what are you doing?
You are opening yourself completely and honestly before God and making yourself completely vulnerable
is that?
To him.
Okay? Very simple. You're being honest with God. Now,
you're asking about more like the spiritual example maybe of this kind of thing? You see an example of it in the New Testament shortly after Pentecost where there was a time when they're all meeting together of one accord and this kind of thing. And one of the followers, one of the believers, had decided to sell an entire plot of land, take 100% of the proceeds, and give it to the apostles to distribute to the community. Another family who noticed this, and they wanted all the adulation, but they didn't want to actually give up everything, they kept a portion of it for themselves, gave the offering pretending it was whole.
Yeah, that turned into a sin.
It turned into a
one
sin.
One was not a sin. Everything was given.
Yeah.
The other one was not. That's a different issue altogether. Well, I grant you, we're not there yet. I'm not talking just the whole
law. That's
a good example.
Because what they were commended for, what the first man was commended for, is that he said he gave the whole thing, and he gave the whole thing.
Yes.
And like we were talking about earlier about, you know, if you try to pick and choose the bull and you want to give the second best bull rather than the best bull, God's going to call you out on it because he's going to know. Maybe no one else will know.
Well, he knows.
And it's the same thing with that story, is that nobody else would have known if Peter hadn't been given insight by the Holy Spirit to call them out on it. So there was a consequence for that.
Okay, now, in your world... Oh, go ahead, Ellie.
It says the feathers go off of the animal as well as the skin.
We'll get there.
Because those two things really stink.
Yeah. we'll get to the point later. Okay. The bird is something very interesting. Pat.
In giving the whole offering and giving the best, you are, in fact, telling God, I will withhold nothing from you and I give myself completely, or I give completely.
Right. That's why you lay the hand upon the bull. You do that. By the way, it's repeated if you have a goat or you have a sheep. Same process goes through. Everything is completely burnt up for a purpose. And these are free will offerings. Later on, we'll find out who is to give a bull, who is to give a sheep, who is to give a goat, and what reason. But we're not there yet. Only we're doing is the introduction here of what to do. If this takes place voluntarily, this is what must be brought forth. All right? So, what is this meaning for us to this today? How do we do this today? How do we do it?
I see for today, presenting our body as a living sacrifice. You know, I think it's in Hosea where he talks about offering up the calves of your lips, I think it says in the Hebrew. So our words count as a sacrifice, if you will, at least as part of it in our phrase. And so today we present ourselves, not an animal, a goat or a bull.
All right. Now, keep that in mind. And because I'm going to read something here. You'll recognize... Oh, Jeff.
I was just saying in Psalm 51, it's kind of illustrates that it's always been that way, in that it says that you desire truth in my inmost parts, my guts. Do I have the guts to be honest before God?
What is complete or entirely in concordance with what is true and what is factual? When you approach God. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of Elohim, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, a holy acceptable unto Him, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable, perfect will of Elohim. For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as Elohim has dealt with each one a measure of faith. So now we become, in a sense, a whole offering, our completeness. We've given ourselves on. We are being not to be transformed. You know, we have this... Our president wants to fundamentally transform America. Well, here, the creator of heaven and earth wants you to be completely transformed from the world and into him. Now, to be transformed, you're going to have to say, what is it all about? Okay, now, let's go into the next one, which has to do with the Minhah offering. Minhah is an interesting word. It means from a portion. Minhah is min, it means from, hah is a portion. Minhah, from a portion. And that particular thing has to do with what's called grain. Now, the grain is very, very important to God. Why is it so important to God? Well, we'll find out if we can try to understand it. The minhah is what kind of offering? It is a korban offering. You still going to approach God now, instead with whole offering now, you're going to approach Him with a grain offering, and it's not just the grain. What must you do with that grain? You must take the hull off. That way the grain cannot reproduce anymore. It cannot grow anymore. And you put it into fine powder, or you basically make it, you'd be making it into a fine, and you mix it with called oil. Now, we don't have a definition of what kind of oil. Doesn't tell you it's olive oil, doesn't tell you anything else, just says oil. And the next thing it says, you are to mix it also with, or have frankincense with it. That is the what's called either the plant itself or the oil of it. I'm not quite sure what it is. I'm not going to go into the statement that it's going to be some kind of oil for the frankincense. It could be actually the plant. Now, at this point in time, I'm asking myself some questions. Okay? He says, verse 2, he shall bring it to Aaron's sons, the priest, and one of whom, now here the priest is doing something with this minhah from a portion. Minhah means from a portion. So just a portion. You're taking all the crop. You're taking only a portion of it. And it's a very small portion, by the way. Not a big, huge. You're not bringing him 17 gallons of wheat there. You're bringing him just enough for a purpose and for a reason. Now, in this particular thing, he says, very, very interesting. I want to ask you some questions here now. And he says, one of whom will take it from, his handful of fine flour with the oil and all of the frankincense, and the priest shall burn it as a, why? To remember something, to bring back to mind, to recall something on the altar, offering made by fire, it's a sweet aroma unto God. Now here is the minhah, or a small portion, a handful of a portion, that's taken from the hand of the high priest and put into the fire along with some of the oil and all the frankincense. And it's called Azkarat. Azkarat. Memory. In memory. Now, when you do that, you're volunteering and doing something, right? This is a volunteer offering, and when you come and you're going to give a minhah, this is still a voluntary one, and it's very special to God. He says, I want you to do it in memory of something. What? What? What are we talking about?
I just kind of made the connection there. They say that of your senses, the smell is the one that triggers, or is the most acutely triggers your memory more than any other sense, and how it's supposed to be a pleasing smell or aroma to God. And those who may not be doing the sacrifice can still smell the sacrifice, and in that smell that they smell, or aroma, they are reminded of the sin sacrifice that they may have done. It's just, the connection came together for me, that how God uses things to trigger us, remember us, be mindful of things, not to sin.
Okay, but there's an issue here I have to challenge you with. Pat.
Future Messiah, the sacrifice that he's making.
We're taking, okay, let's say the Messiah is coming in here, and the portion, the minhah, he's taking a portion of that and he is throwing it into the fire, and he is going to give the oil and the frankincense. We're doing the function of the high priest here. Now, high priest is doing something. What is he doing? What does this represent? Memorial to what? A memory of what? What is the grain offering all about? Listen, what it says here, very, 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 very important. Verse 3. He says, the rest of the minhah of that portion, the grain offering, shall be Aaron's and his son. It is kadosh kadoshim. Kadosh kadoshim. That only, the minhah offering is the only one that is given that kadosh kadoshim. Holy of Holies. It's Holy of Holies. Wow. And what does it say? That Minhah, that part is most holy unto the offering of Yahweh made by fire. So that one handful and the oil and the frankincense thrown into the fire is Kadoshim. Holy of Holies. I thought the Holy of Holies was a building, a place where you go in there in the Holy of Holies. Well, yeah, that's a different word. Different word there. But see, what does it tell you? Now, why is it so important to God that He says, this grain offering, it doesn't fit for any bull, doesn't fit for any goat, doesn't fit for any lamb, doesn't fit for any bird, it doesn't fit for anything. It only applies to the Minhah offering. Why? Yes.
Just a question. So the most holy part of it is actually the part
that got
that's
burnt.
Left over for Aaron and
that which is burnt.
No.
Made by fire. Most holy offerings to Yahuwah made by fire. What was given to the priesthood wasn't made by fire. They didn't burn it up. They used it. They ate it. Why is it so important?
What I read is the rest of the grain offering belongs to Aaron and his sons. It is a most holy part of the offerings made to the Lord.
Don't get that confused. What was made holy was made by fire. Okay. What is holy is made by fire. What was made by fire? What was thrown into the fire? It wasn't what Aaron got. It wasn't what the sons got. It was what the person came, he gave all the Minhah, but only a portion of it went to the fire. A handful went in the fire. Okay? And it says very clearly that which is the burnt one or the holah, made by fire. It turned into smoke. And God said, it's most holy. It's holy of holies unto me. Now, everywhere you look in your text, you're going to find that it always applies to Minhah. Doesn't apply to anything else. Now, there's one exception to the rule. It has to do with the rosh of the wheat. The head of the wheat, you don't do that with. You do something totally different with it. When is the rosh of the wheat? Wheat harvest, right. The first, the head, or the beginning, that which you offer to God during the days of unleavened bread. Yeah. The barley, after the harvest come in, you take a bushel that's called rosh of kazir, the head of the crop. Yes, or wheat. Okay, to make a difference, which barley? This is grain, means any kind, biblically speaking, any kind. When you bring forth that one, you don't do this with it. You do something different with it. All right? So now, with this question in mind, why is it different with that one, that Minhah with that one, but not when you come to give a different Minhah? Why is it so important that it's holy unto God? Yeah. Yeah, it's the first. And so we see these things taking place. Now, you remember that the rest of the crop, I explained this on what the chazir is. It's the crop. The first of the crop you present to God, the remainder of the crop, after you present it to God, then you can turn it into bread that you may eat. And that's the, bringing forth the bread of the earth? Okay, now out of all the flour, you made this fine flour now, and now a handful goes, and it goes into the fire. Now, if that handful, the whoosh, chazir, you don't do this with. But this flour, you do it with. It must be also be unleavened. Right? I just want you to think about this. Are we the bread of the earth?
Since you happen to comment that, and I think this lasts like 5 minutes here, the bread of the earth part. The way which, you may disagree with me, but the way which I see this is that the grain offering, or grains in general, of course, are classed as people. You obviously have barley classed as Jewish. You have wheat classes as Messianic people who believe in the Messiah. The various grains, groups of people as opposed to individuals. And the way in which it appears that God views those types of people, the very first amount that gets consumed or burned up, those who die, and they're dying in God's name. That's how I view it.
Yes.
They're dying on behalf of God, for God, on His name. So they're being murdered for it. To me, I look at that as the most holy is symbolic of this is a group of people, of all of my people, the first ones that die in my name, they are the most holy of all.
Now we're talking about the prophets and the apostles. Jesus said, which prophet have you not killed? Which prophet have you not slaughtered for me? You cast him aside. Had no value. That's like the handful. Which very few of the apostles lived to old age. In fact, the only one we could recognize is John, right? But where was John? Wandering around doing what he wanted to do? No, he was in prison. What happened to Paul? He wandered around? No, he was in prison. It was called house arrest, but he couldn't leave Rome. He was stuck there. He couldn't leave. He didn't have the right to go and continue on, which he can go out. And guess what? We don't know what happened to Paul. Assume he may have gotten killed. I don't know. It doesn't tell us that. Some people may say yes. Some people say we don't have history on it. It doesn't make a difference. So I'm looking at this thing and hear that you're taking this menhah offering unto the priest, and he takes of the flour a handful. The rest belongs to him. He casts that handful into the fire, and it burns up as pleasing to the Creator of heaven and earth. Wow. What a statement. Now, that means, my thinking, maybe I'm wrong, but the mass segment of, quote, the body of Christ is holy unto him, yes. And the reason why it is because those who were most holy died, and that's why you are here today, because you believe what the apostles said, you're living to what the apostles are saying, you believe what the prophets have said, and you're living to what the prophets are saying. Does that make sense to you? Because we are the bread of the earth. Where did we come from? Something else had to die before we became bread of the earth. Of course, that was the Messiah himself. Now he's alive, and therefore, from that point on. Last one, chapter 3. I might be able to do this in 5 minutes, I don't know. This is what's called a peace offering. Now, I want to tell you exactly what the word is. Shalomim. Shalomim, plurality again. Now, yes, very fascinating with the theme because it is something that God is going to do. The guy is going to bring forth. He is going to give his karban. And his karban is shalomim. He offers it with a herd or a female or male. And he offers it without blemish or without. You've got to be pure and holy and right and true. It has to be of truth in the facts. All right? Now we come here. Very unusual word. Yes, it does mean to be safe. But also means to make complete. to make it complete. This is the third one in the series. Shalomim is the third one in the series. The last one in the series. One, two, three. Messiah said something to his apostles. What did he say to them before he died? Not of the peace of the world, but peace I give to you. Meaning what? I'm going to give you complete rest. Now, as you as a human being, and me as a human being, and they as a human being, are going to come before God, they're going to give their korban unto God, they're coming to korban, they're approaching God, and they're going to approach Him now with something called shalomim. And this one's different. This one's different. You know what? Interesting fact about the other meaning of this offering is? Remember I told you another meaning of the offering? As a secondary one, holah offering was this. It also has a negative meaning. This one also has a negative meaning. It's to return for kindness. As you've done something contrary to the one you've come before. And so now you're going to give him something. Yes, it's called a thanksgiving. And it's an overused terminology. In Hebrew, we're not talking about thanksgiving. I'm thankful, God, that you called me. No, I'm thankful that you did not put upon me what I deserve. Therefore, my free will offering is, I want to give this animal to you, male or female, whatever it may be, and come to the point of, wow. And God says, I'll accept that. Because, you know, every one of us in this room owes something to God. He has spared our lives. This is like giving appreciation to God. Being thankful that He has led us and guided us, protected us, and called us out of some of our stupidest things we've ever done in our world, in our life. And we turn to God and say, I'm going to approach you. I'm going to make a kavan. My kavan is to be a shalom. You have given me safety. You have given me peace. You have given me this instead of the other, which I deserve. When you voluntarily do that, what does a God think about it? Wow. That's what He wants. He wants us to do that. In our mind, our heart, and our spirit, what is it you want to do before God? How many times have you privately gone to God and say, oh God, I've been so stupid about this thing. I don't know what to offer you. But I'll offer you my life. I'll offer you whatever it takes to let you know that I really am thankful, appreciative. This is what I'm doing because you've given me safety. You've given me peace. You've given me, in a sense, shalom. You give me shalom, I'm giving it back. And you're asking God. It's a very, very important thing. Now, the interesting thing about this is the one about the birds. Done differently than any of the others. That's in the holah offering, wasn't it? I think it was a holah offering of the bird. Why a bird? Okay. Why a pigeon? Why a turkey? Why not a turkey? Why not a chicken? Why not a peasant? Why these two? What is that bird representing? Why that bird? Why it? What's the reason for it? That's the only one He says you can come to Him. You approach Him and you must do it with this one and not any other kind. Why? What? Okay. What? After the flood. Get that in your mind. After the flood, what bird went out? Went out the first time, no place to find Noah for its feet. Went out the second time, came back with a leaf of an olive tree and rested and had Noah rest on Noah's arm. He brought it unto himself. He sent it out the last time. Where do you think that bird went? To the olive tree. All right. Why an olive tree? Why an olive tree? And then why is this thing being killed? Why is this one having to have his neck cut off? By the way, the Hebrew word that said translated into ring, it doesn't mean take it by neck and twist it. You can't do that because you twist the neck off, snap it, the bird's gone. The high priest is supposed to hang on to the thing. And what's in Hebrew says, clip its neck. Clip it. Off went the head. Okay. He had to then put the blood on the east side where the ashes were. He couldn't let it wander all over the place like how many of you killed a chicken and cut its head off? You let go of the thing because your blood's all over the place. You don't want it to bother you. Well, he had to hang on to that thing. And let the blood, and that bird flew its wings like crazy until all the blood was gone. Then all the feathers had to come off. And then it was cut in two, or split in two, but not separated. The bird was still in one unit, though it's cut from between the middle of the two wings. So we have this thing, we have this bird, very unusual bird, and the first time it showed up is in Noah. And it went to an olive tree. What does the book of Romans say about the olive tree? Okay, go deeper. What makes Israel the olive tree? No, the root is holy. If the root is holy, the trees are holy, the leaves are holy, everything in it is holy. It's the roots that is holy. So during the flood, the roots of the olive tree didn't die. And the dove found Noah. Now, if you want peace with God, I want this. You offer it to Him because you recognize the house of Israel, its root is alive. Trees do not survive if the root's dead. Not a tree in the face of the earth. If the root dies, the tree is dead. Israel, if it wasn't for the Messiah, Israel would be dead. Would never exist. It ceased to be. And that was way back at Noah's time. We have some pictures here of trying to figure out, okay, as we keep on going with the book of Leviticus, I want you to try to concentrate upon, okay, these are certain things He wants to show us, for us to remember why He's doing it, and why it's so pleasant to Him, why especially these things are a free will offering. It's really special to Him, and the Menhah is one of the greatest things that He has. And He says it is Kodesh Kodeshim. Kodesh Kodeshim. Holy of Holies. Or we translate in our English, most holy. Yes?
How do we actually do that practically in this? I mean, I know, is it through prayer only? It's our actions and our thoughts, but what else?
Romans 12 chapter, in the very opening start, and then continue on reading what He says. This is what we can offer to God. Now, when you go to God, you may not have, quote, a bull. You may have a lamb. You may have a bird. You know, but this is what you do. Your transformation of your entire thinking changes, and all of a sudden you become in this direction. And so that's what you offer to God. Read what the Apostle Paul says, and we say, this we can do. How? Get on your knees and say, God, this is what I can offer. And He says, unto much I give to those that love me. Yes.
Well, you know, in answer to your question about like how can you do this today? Well, put yourself in that position. How would you have come to God with each of those offerings? And come to God with the same attitude as you would have had with each of those offerings, without an offering and without an altar to put it on. That's what God wanted in the first place. While the offerings were being offered, after the temples was gone, same thing.
Yeah,
when he wanted.
Yeah, he really wants something from you. And he tells you what he wants. And in the book of Romans, to my mind, this is what living to sacrifice, this is what you are, this is what you to offer. And because now we have the Spirit of God living within us, and we have that option to do, and we can, on our knees, request that from God. Which one he gives us is what he gives us, not what we want. All right? Very important that we accept what he gives us. Then we can give back to him. Yes.
Well, we still haven't... That's a heart position, what you're saying. But in, you know, with us keeping the feasts and the Sabbaths and the first fruits, and, you know, is that part of it? I mean, we've stepped into...
When you go, my personal opinion, right? When you go, especially these holy days, you are carbon. You are going before him. Now, that's why it's important. When you go to the Feast of Tabernacles, you shouldn't be going there because you like living in the woods. You should be going there because you like the food. You should be going there because, boy, I can take off and go fishing. You're there because of one reason. You're going before the Creator of heaven. You're carbon. You're offering something to God. And what are you offering to God? Ah, you offer your life, your joy, and you're thankful to him. Which one of these things do you not offer? And Jesus said, remember, not Jesus said, in the book of Mark, when he was asked, what is the greatest commandments? We all know what it is, right? You remember what the lawyer said? You spoke correctly. It is far greater than all of the holah offerings ever given. To love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, with all your strength. And to love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. And we have a hard time sometimes at the feast for just 8 days putting up with one another. I'm serious. Sometimes we have a hard time putting up with one another. We have a tendency to see, well, you know, I'm walking the right direction, but they're not. I wish they would just listen to what, quote, the preacher's saying, in a quote, or they would just listen to what's going on, or have eyes open and see, who are you to judge another man's servant? Let Jesus Christ handle, let the Messiah handle the individual person. And he will do so. Because what did the Apostle Paul say? He will finish the good work he began in you. He also will finish the good work he began in the person you have a hard time with. He is going to do it. If you can come to God with sincerity and truth, with truth and fact, that's all that God has for you to do. That is a great blessing to God. He wants it. It's a sweet aroma to him. It's pleasant to him. That's what he's after. Yeah, we see these physical things. And we look at the physical things. What does that mean today? What's the purpose of it? It has no value to me today. Because we don't do that today. Wait a minute. Book of Romans says, oh yes, you do. Oh yes, you do. What the Apostle Paul said, I think it's in Philippians, I'm not quite sure. But think upon these things. Instead of looking at somebody else's fault, somebody else's inadequacy, somebody else's character, somebody else's tolerance that you can't stand, look at that. Go there. Go to that place. Because God's going to work in them as much as he's working in you as an individual. Maybe they could God longer to work with you. Because you may look at somebody and all their faults. And he says, okay, I'm going to have a greater sacrifice, and I'm going to have to teach you something you don't want to know. But you know, just change your thinking, please. Just listen to the apostle. His life was taken. Listen to the prophets. Their life was taken for your sake. For your sake, they were slaughtered all day long. You hear them? They're amongst the living, amongst the dead.